Hey everybody and welcome. This is Donovan Bankhead with Springfield Music, and I appreciate you dropping in and listening to the podcast. With the Bow Better Bands podcast, my intention is to talk with our fellow educators across the state and share some of their best tips, tricks, and best practices. Also, maybe even share some of the things that they're struggling with so that we can help each other out, because we're all dealing with so many of the same issues in your programs. And us, as your school music dealer, want to try to be a resource to help you solve some of these challenges and issues. So anyway, we always appreciate you listening. And if you have ideas or tips or would like to be featured on the podcast, reach out to me and let me know. Donovan@springfield-music.com. All right, let's jump in.
Thanks for listening to the Mo Better Bands podcast. If you have something to share, click the links in the show notes of your podcast app and leave us a message. Or email me directly at Donovan@springfieldmusic.com. That's Donovan @springfieldmusic.com. If you'd like to be a guest, would like to recommend a guest or a topic, shoot me a line. Thanks again for listening.
Well, my guest today is Zach Barber, and Zach started his marching career with the Avidity Independent of McKendree University, and where he discovered his love for performing arts. And he spent many years with that. He also spent 4 years with Madison Scouts Drum and Bugle, and served on the leadership team for the Color Guard, did a lot of other like Color Guard activities. And he's been teaching Color Guard and Winter Guard for many years. He's currently in the Kansas City area. He's working with Steve and Lindsay Vento at Blue Springs. And he's worked at many other schools as well, and has helped people with Color Guard, choreographing, show design, all that kind of stuff. And you're also a recommended guest from Lisa McMahon, which makes me really excited to have you on. So Zach, welcome to the Mo Better Bands podcast.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here and being talked about band.
I know this is going to be, it's going to be a really great conversation. Before we get started, I'm just going to tell anyone who's listening that if you've heard any episodes where you hear clicking in the background, because I've had a few people ask about that, it's my dog that's walking around. So I've got a 70-pound German Shepherd that walks around, and sometimes he chews the desk I'm at. And so you'll hear that. And then today I have a cold, so you may hear my mic clicking on and off as I blow my nose. So so just bear with me here as we go through that. Zach, kind of tell me, let's start a little bit about your thoughts on, you had sent me some things. I asked you kind of, you know, what are some things that you're really passionate about. And one of the first things that caught my attention was your thoughts about competition. And I know definitely today we're going to talk about like show design and how to pick a designer and stuff like that. And I definitely want to get to that. But I would like to start with your kind of what your opinions on the competitions, the values of competition, and what we should and shouldn't be looking to get from them.
Yeah, well, so, you know, I think with everything, it's important to identify for your program, for you as a person, for you as a director, for your students, what does competition mean? You know, in the eyes of a designer, competition can be going to the show and just seeing how we compare towards everyone else. I think it's important to recognize what competition means in the sense of ourselves, though. You know, some people can equate competition and competitiveness to our worth. Like, if we are not successful, then it was a fail. If we didn't do well, then maybe it wasn't the best thing to do or take these risks or do these ideas. So I think it's important to recognize, like, what does competition give our students? Because, you know, it's an educational activity. It's important to know that competition does not define your worth. And I think that is so crucial. I think that so often in webinars and things like that, we as people want to be successful. And I think we fail to always put into words what success actually is. I think that we look at competitions as you either win or you lose. If you're not in the top three, it wasn't successful. If you weren't the crowd favorite, then what did you do? And competition is so much more than that. Competition teaches our students confidence. It teaches them work values. It teaches them how to better understand the social environment of teamwork and how that contributes to the overall atmosphere of our band programs, of our color guard programs, percussion programs. And I think it's so important that when you're designing shows or when you're doing anything that you recognize what competition means to you, because competition can mean very many different things to me. It can mean different things to another designer. It can mean different things for a band director. And being able to identify what your idea of competition is the first step to being able to create a successful show, in my opinion. That's just my thoughts.
Yeah. It's funny, you know, you say that and you're talking about competition and schools and programs. And I immediately, for whatever reason, it hit me when you said, like, it doesn't define your worth, because obviously in the music retail business, it's very competitive. Right. And we don't have, like, competitions that we go to, but we compete with other businesses all the time. And much like how band programs will go to competitions and get ranked, and, you know, in business, we kind of do the same thing. And sometimes if you're not in the top, it can be hard to make it realize, like, well, that's not a reflection on me as a person.
Yeah.
Because our business is so personal to us. And I think as a director, our programs are so personal to us. Like, I always feel like my business is like this larger, visible representation of myself,
yeah,
much like the way a band director would about their program. And so if it's not chosen, then you can't help but feel rejected. And I think some directors can sometimes struggle with that when it comes to competition as well.
Well, I think when you're so in the process and all the things that you do, we have a habit of using our identity to the things that we're so involved in. And so whether it be your store in your business or the program that you've been at for 4 years, we infuse our identity and who we are with that image. And so what happens is then, like, oh, we go to a competition and it doesn't go well. And how do we respond? You know, how do we respond to failure in front of our students? And, you know, what is failure? If we view failure in the sense of, you know, going to a show and not getting 1, 2, and 3, that's not failure. Like, there is success beyond placements 1, 2, and 3. And if you put your worth into going to a competition and not getting 1, 2, or 3, then you're not doing it for the right thing, because at the end of the day, it's educational, you know. And especially, I think one of the most important things to think about too in all this is we're coming out of COVID, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That has affected so many things in band programs, from recruiting to talent, all of these things. And so to come out and assume, like, the best of things, like, we're going to come out and get first, second, third, or how does that define you? There's going to be moments where we're not our best, but that, I don't think, for me, I've had to work on this. That doesn't define me as a person. You know, competition is something I do that is a part of the activity that I enjoy, but it does not define my participation within the activity. And I think, mm-hmm, that's so important. And I think that's important to teach our students too, because realistically, there's only so many 1, 2s, and 3s. And if you only think 1, 2, and 3 is worth it, then you're going to be struggling for a minute to try to get there. And it's not going to be fun. You know, I live
right.
If you're not having fun, it's not worth it.
Well, and really it should be about the performance, you know. Yeah. And the opportunity to perform in front of a crowd and an audience, and an appreciative audience at that, which is one of the greatest things about going to any type of competition, whether it's a jazz band competition or marching competition or whatever. And I know, like, for myself, when I go to a competition today, and certainly when I go to DCI or watch any of the DCI shows, I honestly don't care who wins. Like, I'm just having a wonderful time watching all of the chords perform, because they're all so tremendous and amazing. And I'm blown away now just by how amazing even the open class core is compared to what they were in my era, you know. And the quality is just so exceptional across the board. And you see the same thing even with high school band programs today, that the quality of programs today is just, it's just really, really outstanding. Yeah. And it's super enjoyable to watch. And one's score and placement is not really that important. Oftentimes very subjective.
Well, and I want to be clear. I want to be clear about something too. We all want to do well. You know, like, it's one thing to say, like, it doesn't matter. And, you know, how do we identify competition and what that means to the self and the ego and all those things. It does matter. Like, you know, but because people love the gratification of knowing what I did felt worth, like, it had worth and value. But I think it, like you said, there are outstanding things happening everywhere going on right now, you know? And so you know, I think it's easy for people, and this is, I always try to be very direct about this. It's so easy for people to get into these meetings and be like, oh, competition doesn't matter. It does. It teaches a lot of things to students, but you can learn a lot by being at the upper end, and you can still learn just as much on being at the lower end. It's a spectrum of knowledge. And I think if you only equate it to 1, 2, and 3 or anywhere in the top, you're limiting what you can learn.
Well, and the competition is more with yourself, and yeah. It's the quality of performance that you're able to put together. How well can you execute the ideas that you had for the show? Like, I mean, it's so much more about that than, because you can't control what other ensembles are going to do. You can't Absolutely. Control what judges are looking for. Like, so you're really just competing with yourself, and how well can you put a show together and perform it on any given performance?
No, I entirely agree with that. You know, I like that you said that too, because that was one of the things that they taught us at Scouts, is that you should only put stress into the things that you can control. I cannot control what the competing bands are doing. I can't go
right.
to a rehearsal and be like, oh, well, here's the thought. You know what I mean? Like, I can only control what our ensemble is able to do. And so putting stress beyond that is just not worth it. You know, we should take and redirect that focus to how can we build up our students and build up the education that they're using.
So as we think about that, because this is such a great time for us to be having this conversation, it's spring. A lot of directors many directors already have their shows picked. Many directors are probably using the show that they were going to use last year but never got to use. But if for those that are looking or just for going forward, kind of give me some idea about how the process of a show designer works, and like what you're looking for when you're looking for programs that you help and work with, and what exactly that, you know, you can kind of bring to that relationship of a band director and a show designer. Kind of walk me through how that process works.
So when I am reached out, when someone reaches out to me, usually that they're talking about, hey, we have a show we want to do, or hey, we would really like to go to this next level and talk about like what kind of visual elements or what are the things that we can do that would help our band stand out at competitions. You know, and I think that as a show designer, for me personally, I got to think about an assortment of things. Everyone deserves an equal opportunity. You know, you want to make sure that every program is getting what they need. So I always think it's important to think about like what inspires choice. So like when I'm sitting in my role, you know, as a program coordinator or show designer, the first thing we have to ask ourselves is like, what is the staff? Like, what kind of staff do we have teaching the kids? You know, do they feel comfortable teaching band body? You know, that's an emerging idea right now that's so prevalent. And it's, you see a lot of the top groups doing it. Is that something we want to explore? Is that something we feel confident in?
Can you get, but you said band body, which is a term I'm not familiar with, and probably other people are, but me being the music store guy, not the band director, can you explain what that is?
Yeah, no. So band body would be like, so an easy, like if you're watching groups like Blue Devils or Santa Clara Vanguard or Blue Coats, like you're seeing all these musicians having to do all this choreography, this movement, whether it's plié, and it's more than the traditional pop it and plié, hit a four starch back into second, you know, it's
right.
more intricate stuff that helps elevate the production. And so when we're looking at this, I mean, everybody wants all these things, you know, everyone wants all the bells and the whistles, but you have to ask yourself, you know, what kind of staff do we have teaching the kids? Are we able to actually educate and teach those things? Because if we're not, it is an educational activity. Education must always outweigh production. And that is the biggest thing I try to hammer home with people, is that, you know, I think that a lot of times we think about like the top tier of things. We think about like the end goal. We think about where we want to be long term, or what things we look at that we really want to emulate and be like. And we forget what we're working with in the moment and the steps it takes to get to the end of the journey. So I think it's really important to evaluate things like, what kind of staff do you have? Like, who can actually teach these things? Is it something that we can do? If it's not, and it's not realistic this season, do we want to start planting those seeds now? Do we want to start talking about, like, from an educational standpoint, do we need to start working on a body warm-up that they're going to do every single day, that they're going to be working on? They're going to just do neck rolls and pliés and these stretches and this conditioning. Like, what does that look like to build into that thing? Just like when we're thinking about getting kids to march and play, they didn't just pick up the instrument and start playing. And then we're like, we're good. Let's start marching. You know, they have years of building those skills. That's the planting of the seed. And then they get to high school and we're able to now attempt marching and playing. You know what I mean? That's not just sixth grade. So, you know, things that I talk about, like what inspires choice, you know, kids are a big thing. You want to know, like, what are you as a director are going to know what your kids are like. Some kids are going to be really into those like esoteric, deep, no concept shows like Blue or The Gradual Horse. And it doesn't, you know, and the kids are going to be like, okay, here's the music. Here's the thing. We do it. We're having fun.
Right.
Some places, you know, if you're designing shows for a football night, like, you know, not every band is trying to be in BOA, and that is great. That doesn't take away from any experience that the students should be able to have. You should assess what kind of people you're performing for. Is it a Friday night football game with like a couple parades? Like, what is that? Maybe you're doing like a pop tune. You know what the people are going to be able to support, because you want to get student, parent, administrative support. That is so important. You as a director will have preferences. Just like I prefer Smart Water, someone might prefer Pellegrino, or you know what I mean? Like, people have preferences. You know, I love the color blue or the color orange. What are your preferences and how do those contribute to the pot? These are just a couple things. I mean, the list can go on and on about what inspires choice, but I think it's important to know that in creating a show and in doing all of those things, there's so many things that go into picking a show, and there's no one right or wrong way. You know, some people, if you think back to when COVID happened, still happening, when people were, we were holding on to the idea of having a marching band season. No one cared what the marching band show was. All they cared about were the kids able to march and play, get the education, have fun, and do what they love. And it was like, Sweet Caroline Pep Band, let's go, let's do this. Ain't no mountain high enough, you know? And when we made those decisions, we didn't care about competition. You know what I mean? The decision was easier to make because we weren't putting this weird pressure on ourselves of like, oh, is it going to be received well competitively? And so I'm a big advocate that when you're designing shows and you hire a show designer, or if you're a show designer and you want to design shows, or you don't have it in your budget and you're just doing it yourself, you know, go by what you feel is right. There is no wrong. You know, you could do a show called Blue. You know, that's always like a go-to, but it could be anything. And you can pick any sort of imagery. You can go to Shutterstock and put in blue images. And then you could be like, find three adjectives you'd want the show to describe. Be like, angular, blue, exciting. And you'd be like, exciting, angular, blue images on like a search engine. And these images start to pop up. And then you can get inspired by that. And then, oh, let's go like this. Ooh, this really looks like Tron. Okay, let's pull some Tron aesthetics into there. Let's see what this looks like. And then, you know, the goals of your program. Like, we're looking to introduce movement this year. So, okay, let's figure out like three little phrases in the show that we're going to do. Little body stuff. Get the kids excited to buy into it. Like, what is that?
Right.
Like? You know, and then just be realistic. You know, I think when you're talking about what inspires choice and about going into picking out a marching band show, you got to be realistic, you know, with anything that we do, you know, being realistic with yourself, with your staff, your designers. I can't tell you how often I work with people and they're like, oh yeah, no, I'm feeling whatever you think, you know? And then we put all this stuff together and then they're like, oh, well, we can't do that. We can't do this, you know?
Yeah. Like, they start having opinions and facts and realities start coming out.
If you're like, if you like tell me this all from the beginning, you cannot, there is no such thing as over communication in my book. You know, I'd rather you over communicate and tell me as much detail down to like, you know, and these were the color shoes we were really feeling like we wanted to wear. And I'd be like, sounds good. Let me put it together. But I think so many times we're scared to communicate, you know, we're scared to be realistic. And I think it could be a positive and a negative, but I try to tend to be on the very realist side of things. Like, I'll look at things and be like, that's not going to be in our best interest. And people be like, we need to give it time. And I'm like, no, I can see at this point, you know, I'm being realistic. Yeah. Like, we are not the kind of band who should be going out here and doing a swing tune right now. That's not in our repertoire. We should work on building our percussion right now. And what can we do that's going to help them get where they need to? So years from now, we want to do this in 2 or 3 years, we gotta, if we want to do a swing jazz show in the marching band, okay, we're going to build that percussion up. We're going to make sure we're looking at our players and what can they do. And we're going to plant that seed now, so a couple years from now we can do it, because it's not going to maybe happen this year, because we got to know about what we have. And that's where I get to the idea of work with what you have, not with what you want.
Yeah.
That's a big one for me, because I think a lot of people don't do that.
Yeah, kind of elaborate on that, because I think that's the thing that I see more successful programs focus on, is they really think about, well, what do I have that I can use? And they build around those strengths. And then I see other programs that spend a lot of time and energy and maybe don't get the results you're looking for, because they're building a show and a concept around the program that they wish that they had. Right. And I think, which ends up just creating frustration, I think, for the students and the director, and honestly, sometimes even for the audience. So tell me a little bit about your kind of thoughts on building a show for the band that you have.
So in terms of like working with what you want, not what you have, I think it's important to identify, you know, we always look to things that inspire us. You know, that could be band programs that we've seen do things similar. It can be an art production, a dance production. It can be things like that. But it is very important to know that, like, realistically, if your trumpets are at a grade level two, okay, and
which aren't they always?
Yeah, they're like a grade level two, and you know, you're like, well, we really want to do like this like triple tongue trumpet feature, and you know that's not realistic. That's not working with what we have. We need to look at every strength to the program. You know, again, I go back to like, what are our strengths and what are our weaknesses? And that can be a tough conversation, truly. You know, mm-hmm. being able to identify a strength and a weakness is, I think, one of the tougher things, because again, going back to where we started this conversation, how do you separate competitiveness from my worth? And when you have to equate something and you have to recognize that I have a weakness, or the band program or the color guard or whatever aspect of the program might be weak in this area, that does not reflect me. It does not reflect it. It actually, in my opinion, in identifying weaknesses, you're putting yourself a step further forward. Because in identifying weaknesses, you are allowing yourself to view the highway that you need to get on to get where you're going. Because so often, we kind of beat around the bush. We try to hide, not embrace. Oh, the trumpets aren't really good at syncopation, so we're just going to completely just not even feature the trumpets the show. Like, we're just going to avoid that idea. We're going to hide that. No, like, we can build on that thing, but we need to be realistic about what it is. And we can feature them, because if we want to get them to that moment where they can do those things, we have to recognize it now and then move forward with it. If we try to hide it, we're never going to build it. And then eventually we're going to get to a moment where it's like, well, what do we do now? Mm-hmm. I think it's important to recognize, what do you have? You have a really awesome alto saxophone. Okay, well, let's start the show with that. What else you got? Okay, well, our woodwinds are really strong. Okay, well, let's really make sure that the woodwind feature, when we get to that moment, is really well written. It's going to really stand out. It's going to make everyone feel really strong. Oh, we play really well emotionally. Like, I feel as a band director confident that I can say, I can get the kids to play with such an emotional sound. And you're like, okay, great. In the ballad, we'll program this piece that's going to really tug on your heartstrings. Those are like easy to be like, those are what we have that's really good. The harder question is when I go, so what do we want to, like, what do we want to stay away from maybe, or what do we want to be careful about approaching? Our percussion's is very young this year. Okay, so how are we going to look at the programming of that? You know, is it going to be a percussion heavy show? So then in picking a show, we need to make sure it's not something that's going to be like industrial or relying on the percussion for like this blast sound. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's the last thing we want to do is put them out there that, oh, our percussion is younger. We don't need to feature them this year, then. That's not
right.
We don't need a giant band dance break wrapped around the percussion and the percussion's just hitting quarter notes. You know what I mean? Like, that's not, we can't do that. So what are our weaknesses? And then how do we grow from that? I think that's important, because it's one thing to recognize a weakness. That's it. But then it's like setting the highway up. How do we set that highway up to get where we got to go?
Yeah. I mean, certainly as an educator, you want to be working on that, but it's not realistic, I think, in most cases, that you're going to make improvements on those during your marching season. Yeah. So I'm a trumpet player. So let's just say, for example, we'll stick with blasting on the trumpet players. Let's say that we say our trumpet, you know, our trumpet section's just, you know, not particularly strong, and they don't have a good upper register. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't writing music in the upper register in the hopes that by the end of the season they'll be able to play it there is not gonna do it. Like, they don't know how to do it. Making them do it more and doing it poorly is not going to teach them how. So you're going to have to find a way to teach them how to properly play in the upper register. And then you can write more music that's up there. But, you know, putting them out there where they feel uncomfortable and exposed because you're exposing their weakness isn't fair to them and isn't a key to success. And I love the thing you said about, you know, if our percussion section is weak, then let's not do a percussion feature. And sometimes I'll see bands. And of course, you work a lot with, you know, these tremendous bands, but I see all types of bands. I see the 1A, 2A bands and all the way up to the 5A bands and 6A bands in Texas and Oklahoma. And you see some of those smaller, younger bands, you know, they tend to be not as strong players and maybe also aren't as exposed to the marching activity as other programs are. And there's times where I'll see them and think like, man, if I had a band like this that maybe struggles with intonation, I don't think I'd feature them in a ballad. You know, I don't think I'd feature them in something that has long sustained chords that are going to be out of tune for a long period of time. And that if my band doesn't emote musically very well, I don't think I'd want to put them in that spot to expose that. I might think if I had a band, it's like, you know, they do a good job playing fast and loud, but they don't do a good job playing soft and quiet, playing ballads. Well, like, let's do almost all fast and loud, and we'll do a 32 measure slow thing, and that'll be a whole tune. Like, you know, play with what you got. So if you're going to go make a meal in the kitchen, you know, figure out what recipe calls for the ingredients you have, you know, and then if you want to do other recipes, you might need some different ingredients, but work with what you got.
Well, and I think that's another thing too, is so when a lot of these bands, they emulate what they see at the top. And, you know, they want to look like, I'm going to speak from a visual perspective. They want to look like these bands at the top. But what you have to remember is that designers are like cooks in a kitchen, and you are not going to enjoy every dish that is produced. Okay. Like you said, like with ingredients, this designer is great with this program. They might not be great with you, and you have to be willing to explore and get an idea for what works for you and your band program. That's why when we talk about what inspires choice, knowing your strengths and weaknesses, knowing what kind of kids you have, knowing your preferences musically, knowing your goals, knowing what resources you have. You know, how many band programs all the time come to me and are like, well, we want to be a finalist at the BOA regional in our area. And I'm like, great. How many times a week do you rehearse? And they're like, once for 2 hours. Okay. We might need to look at our goals there. And you not, you know, that's being realistic. And I think, you know, understanding that not every designer is going to work for every single program is so important. You know, I think we always try. There are so many up and coming designers and up and coming composers and arrangers. And, you know, we can't dismiss them and their opportunities to create and benefit our activity and push it to the next level, because everyone wants to go to the same kitchen and have the same steak from the same person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think it's so crucial to our activity that we elevate and see potential in other people and be willing to grow and reflect, because every designer at the top right now had someone look at them and believe in them. Mm-hmm. I think that so many times we get caught up in, again, competition and what is the competitive nature. Well, I want to win at any means possible, that we forget that, like, you can be successful and not have to go to the very far end of it. You know, you can be realistic about what success is to you. You can be realistic about how you want to get to those goals and how you want to do those things. And it doesn't have to be at the end spectrum of like trying to hire out like the most expensive designer in the world, because you might not work well with them. And that's okay. That's an okay thing to recognize. Not every spice goes in every dish. You know, mm-hmm. I may like garlic and you may like strawberries, but that doesn't mean we need to put garlic and strawberries together.
You know? Right.
Like, I think that's just so important to me. I think that a lot of people overlook, you know, if all we ever do is put the time and power into the people who are already at the very top, then we're not building from the bottom. It's the same way when we educate. You know, if you only focus on your top performing students, you have to think about the bottom of the program. Like, who are the up and coming? Who are your freshmen? Who are the kids who need that help right now to like really thrive and get where they need to go?
You said something that one has to be careful of, I think, when you say like the best versus the bottom. And this may be a little controversial. Again, this is probably just because like the business person speaking here, but in the business world, you know, we will bet on the winning horse. Mm-hmm. And you're right that sometimes like you may have, you know, a fantastic group of musicians, but they're upperclassmen, and you do need to focus on the up and coming students. But I wouldn't advise someone that puts a lot of effort in the bottom performing students in terms of, because you're going to have some of those students in your program that musically or physically aren't going to be as adept as others, and never will be. And it's great. That's one of the beautiful things about our activity is that we can kind of embrace all those kids. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you want to put those kids in positions where they can be successful without it requiring inordinate amounts of your time try to get them to some kind of standard, you know?
For sure. And that's where it comes down to, like, when you're designing the show, being smart about those things, being realistic about what you have. You know, like, we have to look at, like, the whole package and understand, like, what parts of the puzzle fit where, and how can we be smart about how we arrange the music, how we put the visual responsibilities on the kids. You know, if marching right now, like, I know I have a client this year who talked about that we have missed a lot of opportunities to really work on marching training this year. So we need to be very smart about how we program the show from a drill perspective in the early stages. So it's not sets for no reason. We need to be smart about that so that they can execute both musically and visually while still maintaining that ability to grow from an educational standpoint. So yeah, definitely spot on what you're saying.
Well, and you mentioned something else I kind of wanted to go back to when we were talking about the body movement. I feel like that's obviously a thing that's become like super important in the design of what we do with programs today. Successful programs, successful is the wrong word, top placing ensembles are using a lot of body movement. And you're kind of seeing that in all competitions everywhere, a lot of body movement. But the quality of that movement you're seeing just varies wildly. And you see some groups that do the body movement activities really well, and you see others where they kind of struggle. And there's like, I don't know if you're a TikTok guy, but during the pandemic, I've gotten hooked into TikTok. And there's this trend on TikTok where they'll start the intro to Toto's Africa and they're showing something. And then they get to like the cheesy part of the thing they're showing. And then it's like someone like honking on a recorder playing the intro to Africa. And sometimes when bands do like body movement, if they aren't really adept at it and the kids are out there, it doesn't come across as cool. It comes across as like awkward and uncomfortable. And like you're sitting there in the audience going like, oh man, like I just
got it, sweetie.
Bless their hearts, you know? And so how do you teach that activity, to teach body motion, or really kind of anything, I guess, but we'll stick with body motion, so that it comes across as more authentic and natural and less like strained and forced?
You know, I think it's really important to understand, you have to understand the bodily, how the body functions and works. And I think for me, what I've noticed is that you cannot force it. You know, you have to show them what's going to be comfortable for students. You know, I think when I watch body movement, sometimes I've seen it taught many different ways. You know, very, very, very firm lines and very sharp dance and this and that and this. And it's very rigid and it doesn't allow the body to move in a natural position and an authentic nature. So I think from a technical standpoint, when you're teaching those things, you have to understand that like the leg doesn't have to truly be at a 90 degree angle for the effect to still come across. The aspect is uniformity. And if the ensemble is comfortable with the leg being at a 45 and it looks good and they're executing well, there's nothing on the sheets that's like, well, you only got to a 45. So, you know, it's about uniformity and comfort is so important in that. I think another thing is like getting kids comfortable with movement comes a lot from how we approach movement and how we allow ourselves to be vulnerable with in front of our students. There's so many times where you can be ready to teach a movement phrase, or I've seen people start to teach a movement phrase and they're like, okay, this is going to look silly, but you're going to do this. And I'm like, Well, don't say that, because now they're going to think I'm going to look silly. You know what I mean?
Or, right.
Oh, you look weird when you run like that. Let's try, like, how we talk about how we move and things like that, and how we allow ourselves to express and be vulnerable is so important to their ability to be, like, the cool factor, to, like, break down those walls and be willing to try those things. Obviously, with education and training, they're going to become more comfortable. They're going to do things that are going to be uncomfortable, and the more they do them, the better they're going to get. That's the nature of the beast. But allowing a comfortable environment where they can grow and be silly and learn and experiment with those things in a non-threatening way, I think that's what's crucial to it. You know, you can do things where you do exercise with your kids where it's like, hey, go come up with 8 counts. Just you and your friend come up with 8 counts. And then if you have like pairs of people, now let's, everyone gets a random number and you're going to go come up with 8 counts. And then what we're going to do is everyone's going to come back together and we're going to put all these 8 counts together and we're going to do it as a group. So everyone feels like they got to contribute to the movement phrase and they all felt really cool about it. And now it's not this like intimidating thing we have to learn. It's something that we created and it was tangible for us as students. And now when someone teaches me, I can go, oh, so this is like their creation. Like when I created and taught someone.
I think that's such an important portion of what you mentioned earlier about the language we use and recognizing that when anyone is doing something outside of their comfort zone, so we'll say, you know, a band kid doing body movement, you know, recognizing that they're going to feel likely very vulnerable in that moment, and language that we use to either praise or correct is really important because that's going to affect how willing they are to continue to trust you and the feedback you're giving them and put themselves out there to try and do this thing. And certainly in the beginning, they may look awkward and may not be giving you the result we're looking for, but finding language that's encouraging and not condemning is so important. And I've certainly been around enough rehearsals to hear both types of language, you know? Yeah. And I've been in ensembles where I've heard both types of languages, you know? And you hear some where, I was fortunate enough, like through my high school career to have like an amazing, we had a national champion color guard, and which was phenomenal. But dang, man, sometimes you'd hear the way the instructors would talk to those girls and you'd just think like, whew, like that's, God, man, that hurts. Like that hurts me to the core. And I think it's maybe a little better now than what it used to be. I think we're a little more kind for people and less snarky and mean. Sometimes it's just mean. But I think these kids are,
you have to build confidence in them, you know, like you're creating the educators of tomorrow. You're building up the performers of tomorrow, you know, especially when I teach DCI and I talk to the performing members, I'm like, what you do on the field inspires the generation of tomorrow to decide that they want to come be a part of DCI. You know, how you talk to people and how you run an environment. I've been a part of really great environments. I've also been a part of really negative environments. And I can tell you that I've learned a lot from both, but I, as everyone does, we gravitate towards that more positive environment. And there's just a different atmosphere to it. And so you have to remember that, like, even things you don't think, like, you know, oh, that was horrible. Like, just, and you're like, oh, but they know me. They know I'm joking. Kids are not like that. You know, they're impressionable human beings. And they're going to take that one snarky comment you make in that brief second and hold on to it for a year or more. And you're going to get to a moment where you're like, why does this affect you? And they're going to be like, remember when you told me I was horrible? And you're like, I didn't know that was a thing. I don't even remember that, you know? And so they are sponges. And how you talk about, you know, I have a friend who teaches in Oklahoma, and she is so vulnerable and authentic with her students. And, you know, she talks about like how she talks about herself, even how we talk about ourselves rubs off on our students. If we look at something we're doing and we're like, oh, you know, but yeah, no, it wasn't that good. It wasn't. And we don't accredit that. Our students model that eventually. They learn that and they see that and they model that. So you have to be thinking about it at all times as an educator. How is this helping my students grow to who they need to be? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think, and like you said, so many times when there's like a negative environment like that, I feel like realistically we're equating success to our worth. And we get vicious because we're going to do everything at every turn possible to protect the self. And right now, this woodwind feature or this flag feature is not hitting. And that's going to come back on me and my life. And it's like, it's not, it doesn't work like that, you know? Many people have moments where things aren't the best in the world, or aren't the most clear, or the whatever you want to equate it to, the words, the verbiage. But that doesn't take away from you. It doesn't take away from you as an educator. You know, if you look at every single little pothole you hit on the highway as a stopping point, you're not going to get to the end very quickly. You know, we hit potholes every day when we drive, and we don't go, oh, got to get out and check everything out and stop. Oh, we hit it. We went on. That's how failure should be. That's how we should model failure for our students. It happened. We're going to reflect on it. We're going to accept it, and we're going to acknowledge it. It's important to do that, but it's a pothole. It's a pothole on the way to where we're going. And I think that's so important, because if, again, we stop at every pothole, we are not getting to where we need to go.
Right. Well, and it doesn't mean, too, that we have to just, like, accept everything and you know, be, oh, that was a good try. Let's try it again. Like, we don't have to do that. Like, right. We can be critical, but we want to be constructive with our criticism and feel and like, hey, let's, all right, we got that one out. Let's do this again. I think if we get it a couple times, we'll start getting the flow of it. Or I think sometimes too, like thinking with, you know, again, going back to body movement, just because that's something that could be so uncomfortable. Or, you know, if we think of band things, playing in, you know, playing in tune and balance. With today's technology, it's easier than ever that it is to capture those things. We can record it with our phones and get a visual of it, or get an audio of it, or both. And, you know, we think we're doing one thing when we're doing it live, and then we go back and listen to it or see it, and we realize, oh, we're not quite as in tune as what we thought we were, or we're not quite as together in those syncopated parts as we thought we were, or I felt like I was like really emoting and exaggerating into this body motion thing that I was doing, but then when it's on camera, I'm just doing this. Like, I thought I was like turning my body, and right. No, I just barely shifted and my eyes moved. Like, that was it. Like, oh, okay. So, all right, I need to do this. You know, I have to do more. And then especially if you compare that with like, all right, look at this, and then look at like this professional group that does it and see the difference. Yeah, okay. So let's look. Hey, now we're getting closer, and trying to use those kind of positive reinforcement and direct feedback tools where someone can see what they're doing. I know that for me, like, so I went to a good high school program, but my freshman year, we weren't given drill charts. We were just given coordinates and had never done marching band. And we were constantly yelled at for like not, you know, making the right shape. But the problem was, we had no idea what the shape was. All I knew was like, I'm in my spot, you know, like, and I heard someone, every director's heard that, like, but I'm in my spot. I heard an analogy the other day of like, it's almost like bowling, like going bowling, but like someone's put a sheet up in front of the pins. And so you're just throwing a ball down the alley. And as soon as the ball passes, they drop the sheet, and then you can't see what pins hit. Like, what's the fun in that? Like, and you wouldn't even know what to do with the ball. Like, you wouldn't know, like, did I go left? Did I go right? Like, what happened, you know? And so getting these tools where kids can see and hear what they're doing makes it so much easier to correct it, I think. No, absolutely. And it's easier to do now than it's ever been. We've covered quite a few things here that I think are really good. So kind of recap a few of the things. One, really think about what your program has, right? That was one of your first suggestions. We start to think about our show, what we want to put together. Let's think about, like, what are the things that my ensemble has that I want to highlight, that I want to feature? And then what are some of the things that I want to maybe, not necessarily hide, but maybe I want to develop, but be careful and cautious about how I bring those things along. And I don't have to follow it necessarily like a formula. I don't have to do two fast songs and a slow song just because that's the way it's done. Like, no, whatever kind of works for my ensemble the best, I want to put my kids and my ensemble in the best spot to be successful.
Yeah. And again, it's all that, it's the education piece. What can we teach? What do we feel confident that we can teach? And what do we feel comfortable exploring as educators this season to continue to start teaching? You know, if I have a background in color garden. And so I can tell you that, like, when I first started teaching, would I have felt comfortable teaching like this one-handed prep toss? Absolutely not. So I avoided it. But eventually, you can't avoid those things, and you have to, you know, you embrace it. I was like, okay, well, here we go. We're going to try. We might not put it in the show this year necessarily, or maybe the whole ensemble's not doing it, but maybe I can get these three kids to do it. And me and those three kids are going to really learn how this process works. And you build those skills up together, and you feel really confident. And then a year from now, you're sitting with your show designer, and you're like, hey, you know what I feel like we could put into the show? I feel like I could really make this moment happen, and I could get the ensemble to do this. And no show designer is going to be like, no, because if it's another spice in the pot, we're all trying to make a good soup. You know what I
right.
mean?
Right. Well, and the other side, think of working with a show designer is, of course, you want to make sure that you work with someone that you connect with and that can understand your program. And you know, you want to make sure that someone that you get along with, because that relationship between a director and a show designer is an important one. And it's one where that you've got to have great communication. You got to feel like that you can really understand each other really well, so that the designer's understanding what's going on with the band and what the band needs, and that the director can also teach and rehearse the concept that the designer's coming up with. So that kind of symbiosis is important. And there's certainly no shame in hiring someone to come in and handle these elements for you. Oh. It's certainly what all of the big successful programs do. They're almost all bringing in. I had someone the other day ask me about, I won't name the program, but asked me about a local program. And they're like, man, it just seems like they're really good. Like, you know, why are they so much better than some of the other programs in the area? And I said, well, I mean, yes, it's a good program. They've got good facilities, good feeders, stuff like that. You know, they hire like all that out. Like, you know, it's not the head director who's coming up with that show concept and the drill and everything else. Like, they're hiring really good professional people to come in and put that together for them. And if you're at a big school, you already know that. If you're at a small school, like, you can hire out pieces of this, you know, show concepts, music arranging, the visual element, whatever it is that you feel like is the weakest, and have. And honestly, I think a lot of programs would benefit from having just someone help them put together kind of a theme and a general like visual concept, because yeah. you could use a lot of stock arrangements and stock music and have it be really enjoyable and entertaining. I see more struggle with the visual side with programs than I do the music side. But sometimes just having someone advise you on like, yeah, okay, so you want to do this type of show and you're going to use these stock arrangements. Cool. I can work with that as a designer. Here's kind of the visual package that I see going with that. Here's the way I think. I know we can't do all the uniforms because this is a 2A school, but here's some things we could do to the uniform to kind of bring it in together and make the whole thing look cohesive. You know, that probably doesn't cost an arm and a leg to have someone help with that. And then, of course, you can go to the full, like, yeah, I'll come in and teach everything and fly in for rehearsals and stuff.
And I think there's like, you know, it's like puzzle pieces. You know, you have one piece to the puzzle and that could be the whole image. Like, that's, you know, but like, if anything, I used to be really bad about not willing to delegate, not willing to want to open up the idea of the creative pot, like wanting to share the idea and all those things. But what I've learned is that when I allow myself to delegate these responsibilities or hire out or do these things for other people, it allows me to do what I enjoy. I may not really like teaching weapon, or I really may not like, if you're a band director, maybe you don't find a lot of joy in the creative process. You might not want to go sit for hours and look through images and color palettes and psychologies and things like that and how that all works. That might not be your passion. And simply delegating that out and just going, I don't want to do that. I want to teach the ensemble. I want to do this. That's what I find passion in. There's nothing wrong in acknowledging that, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I personally can say in attest to this, I love teaching kids and I love doing those things, but I don't have a passion all the time for certain responsibilities of a director. I'm not that person. I don't want to do scheduling buses, sending administrative emails, figuring out the schedule. I don't want to do that. I find so much joy and passion in the sitting in an office for like 3 hours going, okay, so like if we do red and the music is really angular, ooh, and then what if we do like the Rite of Spring, but instead of like this dark take on it, we do like Vivaldi's Spring, and then we do like trampolines, and like we do like this stuff, you know what I mean? Like things like that, that's just so different. And it's the creative nature. That's what I thrive in. So like you mm-hmm. said, just being willing to delegate, and you can, you know, a show is so many different pieces, but it, like you said, you can, I'm either, I don't have any of it, or I have to go to the extreme end of it. You can be like, well, you know, in our budget right now, we really don't have this, but I just want someone to be a consultant and say like, hey, mm-hmm. here's some things I'm noticing you could work on. Or, hey, we don't have any idea what we want to do for a show, but we really like these musical pieces. Could you help us like come up with a visual package of like how we would put this together and present something like this? You know, there's so many ways to go about it. Or can you connect us with someone? You know, you may not be able to use a specific designer, but all the designers are interconnected. And if it's a good designer, we all want, you know, one of my biggest things is that I want everyone to have just a good experience. I want those kids to be able to go out there and feel such confidence in what they have and to get excited like I feel when I see marching band, because I lose it at marching band shows. I love watching marching band guys, and I want those kids to be like, we have a really fun show. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, that's what I want. And so you can find people, you know, like maybe this designer you want to use schedule is fully booked. I'm telling you, they'll know someone who could like design for you or give you some feedback or tools to help you get to where you want to be. The only other one I would really try to touch on is making a choice is better than overthinking one. I think that so many times we hesitate to make decisions because we don't know if it's going to be the right one, or what's this going to look like later on, or, you know, if I teach this thing now, is it going to change later? No matter what happens, simply taking the action and making a choice in that moment is going to do something. And if you wait and you overthink it, you're losing critical time where you can be getting better or making things better. You know, I'll use a comparison movement teaching and stuff. You know, you could have something where someone's like as a designer, I'll be like, they really need to know how to do forced arches. Okay. And I call it forced arches, but as we all know, verbiage is different anywhere we go. They could call those like saddle sues, who knows? And they're like, well, I don't really want to teach them because what if when he gets here, he changes them. Okay, but you could teach them, call them saddle sues, and it's the same everything. And then someone comes in and just goes, oh, I would call them a forced arch. The kids still got better. They still got rehearsal time. We still did something that made us better, and we weren't hesitant to make this choice because we overthought it. You know, I'm very big on, you need to be very smart about the decisions you make and very critical of the choices you make, but don't be afraid to make choices for your programs. I think that's a huge thing. I see so often, especially right now following COVID, it's what's the right decision?
Right.
There is no right or wrong, you know?
Just make one.
Do something that you enjoy. Do something that's going to always evaluate the intent. You know, well, when I wanted to teach this musical passage. Well, why'd you want to do that? Well, I thought it would push the kids to grow in this regard. Top-notch thought. You are pushing the kids to be better, and you are being a solid educator. The intent was there. Well, this would be a bad one. Like, oh, I taught them this really difficult movement phrase. Well, why'd you do that? Well, I thought it'd be really cool. And like, it was really fun for me. Like when you make it about yourself and not the students, that's when maybe the decision needs to be refocused. Like, you know, let's reevaluate if this is something that's important right now. Even at the end of the day, making a decision is better than overthinking.
So tell me, kind of as we wrap up here, what are some of the upcoming trends that you think is going to be happening that we're going to see in high school bands over the next couple of years? Are there things that stand out of like, hey, these things are, we're going to see more of this? Are there things that stand out, you think, I actually think we're going to be moving away from that? Any trends that you see or spot or notice from the work that you've done?
Question. I would definitely say coming in these first couple years, as we start to get back to what we feel is our new normal, you might see what you would expect programs to do might tone down just a bit, toning things down, because everyone's had such different obstacles in this last year. You know, some schools didn't face any obstacles. Some were like shut down for half the year. A lot of middle school programs have taken a big hit simply because of COVID and how like that affects their rehearsal schedule. So it'll be interesting. I can't say if I'll notice trends. It'll be interesting to see how we adapt and design around some of these up and coming. I would just say challenges in the moment, like knowing that like the middle school, for like example, one of my primary schools, their middle school met every 2 weeks or something like that. It was something really like, even when I heard it, I was like, oh wow. And so knowing that as a program designer and a show designer, you know, I could be like, I want to do grade level 4 music with syncopated phrases, and I want to have this really weird solo right here. But like in 2 years from now, we're going to be getting these kids who were in middle school band who did not have regular rehearsals. So it'll be like, how do we adapt and overcome? How do we approach that? So I think that'll be a big thing. I would also think that as our activity continues to evolve and grow, more so in the coming years, we're going to see a lot more band body. really motivating and leading the way for how we do staging and drill. I think we're obviously going to still have drill as we've seen it and done it in a long time. But I think that we are going to get to a point where we're being able to be smarter. You know, we talk about like if the band can't march a bunch, like right now, if in the beginning, if we need to spend the beginning of the season really working on marching technique, we might not have as many sets in the opener, but we might really do some cool, easy to craft things like, okay, let's go to pods and everyone hits a sculpture for these 32 counts. And then the next set, rather than drilling, getting to the set, we're just going to block it. We're going to make it a block and we're going to ripple those pods on 1, 5, 9, 13, and they're going to flutter there. That would be something simple that takes up time and space that allows us to train flutter. It allows us to still get time to work on marching technique and things like that. Mm-hmm. So I would be interested to see how, just like with the virtual teachings and things like that, how the educators we have right now continue to push the envelope for how to be smarter, you know, work smarter to overcome some of these obstacles that we've been presented with.
That's great. I think you're right. We're going to see some people adapt. Yeah. And do some things different to get through this. And one thing that we know for sure is there's going to be people that are going to come up with very clever ways to hide those drawbacks and to hide the weaknesses that they've right. had. And, you know, the casual observer will look at it and never know that we took a year off from this activity.
I know, they're going to be the bands are still getting it these days.
Like, yeah, exactly. Directors are great at that.
I'm really excited to see everything just start to come back to normal. I really am hopeful, you know, fingers crossed, we can never be sure of anything we've learned this last year, that things start to regain some sense of normalcy, that we can give the kids that fun experience. Because like I said, I just want the students to be able to enjoy it like we always have.
Yeah, I think we all want that. We want to see them have that experience, get out and perform in front of a crowd that's there to see them, you know, and That's what we want, to have those memories that will last a lifetime. I still remember all the memories I have of playing for different contests in high school and college even, and just, you know, performing. That's just the greatest. You know, I'm one of those people, as I've gotten older, I've learned to actually enjoy practice. I like practicing and things like that. But man, there's just nothing like performance. And it's so thrilling to get to do it. And I'm looking forward for when kids can get back to that. And, you know, on the band side, we're certainly seeing some of that now. And same with Winter Guard, we're seeing some of that, that they've been able to do some of those activities and perform some. But be able to do that in front of crowds again will be really, really exciting when that can happen.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, in terms of Winter Guard, the virtual element was really great that the kids got to do it, but it definitely was not the same, you know. I teach some groups down in Oklahoma, and so they were able to have some in-person shows, and definitely it was a highlight to my winter season this year to come to Oklahoma and be able to go to something in person and be able to see the kids get cheered on and be like, wow, I missed this.
Yeah.